So today I am lucky enough to be joined by Kieran Cuff, the Green MEP for Dublin. So hi Kieran, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's lovely to be here.
So let's start off by talking about cohesion policy. Why do you think this is such an important thing?
Well, I guess if we go back to the big question of why does the European Union exist? And one of the big reasons we joined 50 years ago was because it would give us help in developing. And back then it was an economic union and the focus was on economic activity, building the infrastructure, the sewers, the programmes, the roads, the public transport, the infrastructure we needed to be a modern European state. Now, in those 50 years, the European Union has evolved to have both a social and an environmental focus, which is amazing and a huge step in the right direction. And cohesion policy is there to help the underperforming member states reach the level of development that the rest of the EU has. And, you know, for Ireland, it's been a success story. The income per capita compared to other countries is higher than average. And yet there are many countries around Europe, whether it be Hungary or Slovenia or Croatia. They want to develop. They want to develop in the right direction. And the cohesion funds are there to help them out and help them achieve it.
Yeah, I suppose it's trying to achieve balance, isn't it? It's a club, I suppose, at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, in the same way as in Ireland, we look at counties that are maybe poorer than others and the richer counties help. So if you take actually Greater Dublin, a huge amount of the tax raised in Dublin is going to help counties that are maybe less fortunate than we are. It's to help invest in the kind of projects that are needed. It could be greenways, it could be motorways, it could be improved bus services. That's what we do at a national level, but within the European Union of 450 million, it's what we try and do around the European Union. And I guess the big push at the moment is to help the Central European countries, the Eastern European countries to develop. And you know what? There's a queue of other countries at the door.
Oh, yeah.
I was down in Albania a month ago, and they are dying to be in the European Union. They, North Macedonia, and a host of countries in the Western Balkans, they've seen what Europe can do for you and they want to be part of the club.
Yeah. So can we talk a little bit about how Ireland benefits from all these EU funds? What do we get from it?
Well, I guess looking to the past, what we've got from it is improvements in infrastructure, and that could be water supply, sewage. It could be transport. Clearly, historically, a huge amount of the money went into motorways and roads.
Yeah.
Too much, actually, from my perspective as a Green. But in recent years, we're starting to put a lot more money into both public transport and active travel. And you know what? We have to do that anyway, because we have climate goals that we have to meet. And that's where we can align our environmental policies with our development or cohesion policies. And in the last few years, we've seen the emergence of the Just Transition Fund around Europe to help, let's say, the coal regions where we're trying to push them away from coal. And we have to offer them carrots as well as sticks.
Yeah.
And some of that money is going into training.
Wow.
It's going into reskilling. So instead of digging out coal, maybe you are insulating a house. And here in Ireland, in the Midlands, clearly we're moving away from harvesting turf. It's been in the headlines over the last week. But we want to give people meaningful, good, well-paid jobs. It could be in wind energy. It could be in retrofitting homes. It could be in tourism. So that's where cohesion policy will be bringing Ireland over the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I suppose people think, oh, it's just all they're doing is building new roads. And, you know, that's where all the money's going, roads and bridges and all this kind of stuff. But obviously, there's a lot more, as you say, there's upskilling going on and training behind all this.
I mean, we talk about a social Europe, an inclusive Europe. So that can be about training programmes. It can be about education and skills development in parts of Ireland where you have very high levels of unemployment. It can be about giving people the skills that they need to get back into the marketplace, or if they've never been there, to give them the skills to find a job, or increasingly to create a job. I think when I was in school 30 years ago, it was all about giving you the skills to find a job.
Yeah.
But I think now we're much more focused on, well, you could be the person who creates that job in the first instance. So there's a lot of small and medium-sized enterprises. And I think everybody has an idea at the back of their head that could provide a job for themselves or others. And I think we want to make sure that somebody is given the help, the mentoring to do that.
Mm.
So bodies like Inner City Enterprise in Dublin, which I'd be familiar with, they would be helping people to do that. And historically, they would have received cohesion funds.
Mm.
Now, as Ireland develops, we're moving away from cohesion funding per se.
Yeah.
It's more about alignment with cohesion policy. So the kind of the broad goals of what are we trying to achieve with this money? I mean, years ago, it was just build the damn roads.
Yeah.
But today it's about a greener Europe, a low carbon Europe.
Yeah.
It's about a competitive and smarter Europe. A lot of buzzwords. But what do we mean by smarter? Things like being able to renew your driving license online. So you don't have to queue for an hour in an offices down on Chancery Street. That's what a smarter Europe is to me.
Mm.
It's about having an app on the phone. When I was hopping on the 27 bus to come out here today, it was about being able to use the app to tell you the bus is leaving in 5 minutes from just outside Bessaris. That to me is a smarter Europe. We almost take it for granted now here in Ireland.
Mm.
But for, I tell you, I mean, I spend a lot of my time in Brussels and in Strasbourg. And there's parts of Europe where the internet, shall we say, is as a bit of a ways to go. And I know, look, there's people in rural Ireland who are waiting for broadband and will continue to be waiting for years. But just this kind of seamless society that can use the internet to do an awful lot of their daily tasks. That's what a smarter Europe is all about. So that's part of a cohesion policy. We also talk about, a Europe that is closer to citizens. A lot of people feel very disenfranchised.
Yeah.
You know, what does the council do for me? What does the government do for me? So how do we, for instance, get teenage girls interested in what's going on in where money is spent? Is there a place where they can hang out? And is the government or is the European Union helping them to achieve that?
Mm.
Or let's say you're in your 70s and you'd like to have a swimming pool beside you. Again, cohesion policy can deliver. I know I'm making it sound like it can deliver all of these stuff with the magic wand. It can't do that. So a lot of this stuff is aspirational. But I think just moving away from the kind of the middle-aged grey-haired men like myself and thinking about, you know, asking other people what do they want from society. And that could be immigrant groups.
Mm.
It could be people of colour. It could be any groups who are traditionally underrepresented. And when I look around the European Parliament, I see a lot of people like me. And we have to constantly kind of check our own privilege and think about the issues that are important to us. Are they the issues that are important to most people out there?
Mm. I mean, things take time, don't they? You know what I mean? I know we're in a society now that expects things, you know, click of your fingers, things happen.
Yeah.
Things take time, so...
They do, and recognising what priorities are.
Mm.
I mean, it was only when I became a dad 20 years ago, I kind of became a complete sort of monster given out about footpaths that you couldn't get a buggy up onto or somebody parked in the wrong way. So sometimes it takes a bit of a life change to recognise things.
Yeah.
Or if you have a fall and you're using a stick or a wheelchair, you recognise that a whole lot of the environment you inhabit is not designed around the needs of somebody like yourself.
Mm, it's very true. So we talk about climate change there. I mean, what part do you think the EU funding is playing towards climate change? I mean, obviously climate change is a huge, huge issue at the moment.
A huge amount. And we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years, councils and governments declare climate and biodiversity emergencies. And yet at the same time, so many parts of life go on as if it's business as usual. So the good news is that the European Union, shortly after I was elected 3 years ago, or almost 3 years ago, said, look, we're going to have the Fit for 55 package. Essentially, this is about halving the amount of greenhouse gas emissions by 2030 compared to 2090. 55% reduction.
Mm.
That's great news. How do you do that? Well, you use European money to deliver on that. So within the Fit for 55 package, we have about 16 draft laws that are slowly making their way through the Parliament. There's two that I'm really focused on. The first one is the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive, where I'm what they call the rapporteur. I'm the person in the Parliament who's trying to bring everybody together and deliver on how do we get all our homes to an A energy rating by 2050. We can't do it overnight, but the kind of grants you've seen announced recently in Ireland and the kind of policies we're doing in Europe, the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive, will push us to bring the amount of energy we use in buildings down to almost zero over the next 30 years. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
But there's another 15 pieces of legislation. Another piece is what we call the Sustainable Aviation Fuels Directive. An awful lot of people fly, and they fly a lot. And Ireland being an island off an island, you could argue that we need to fly. So how can we take the kerosene that is responsible for a huge amount of greenhouse gas emissions, 4.2%, if you actually take the what we call the non-CO2 effects, the knock-on effects of aviation, it's about 10, 12% of greenhouse gas emissions.
Wow.
So we need to move away from burning kerosene. What are the alternatives? Biofuels, great, but not so great, because we don't want to compete with land for food, with land for fuel. So biofuels will pay a little bit of a part. But we're also looking at something called synthetic aviation fuels and eventually hydrogen and electricity. This is kind of rocket science stuff. It's not easy. A lot of it has been done in test tubes at the moment.
Yeah.
But the European Union is providing the money to look at new types of ways of moving aeroplanes around that are not as bad for the planet. So all of these files are the Fit for 55 package.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope by the end of our five-year term, our five-year mandate, to have approved all of these laws, and they will hopefully within the next 8 years have reduced our greenhouse gas emissions considerably.
Yeah.
That's all a bit theoretical. I suppose insulating your house, that's a very simple thing. We all know why we have a lagging jacket around the hot water cylinder.
Mm.
But the move towards electric cars, we want to see that happen, but we want to see it happen at a price that people can afford if they have to drive. Electric cars are currently fairly expensive.
Mm.
But you know what? Most people are buying fairly expensive cars anyway. So this argument that we can't have electric cars because they're too expensive, when you look at somebody buying a car for 20, 30, 40,000, I mean, there's new electric cars coming in at 25, 26 grand.
Yeah.
Sure, if you want to buy a bog standard Ford Fiesta, it's maybe 17 grand. But over the next few years, the electric car prices will come down, and they're better for the planet, but they're also better for the local air pollution. And living in the city centre, I'm well aware of this. I have asthma. One of my kids has asthma. We want to try and improve the local air quality, because that kills 1,300 people per year in Ireland. And in this whole row about so-called ban on turf, but the reason we're kind of moving to cleaner fuels is it improves the air quality. And we all know somebody who's using a blue inhaler. We want to move people away from that. We want to give people healthier, longer lives, whether it's children or older people. And the move away from commercial turf extraction, the move away from dirty coal. We've been trying to do this stuff for 30 years. We need to move further and faster to get it right. What the European Union is trying to do is to help member states, help countries develop in a sustainable way that helps bring jobs, bring improved quality of life, bring clean air, clean water, clean food to the majority of people. And that is something I think we need to do a lot more of in the years ahead. So I remember the head of the European Environment Agency, he said, look, this was when Brexit was going off and it was going on and we were all scratching our heads. And he said, look, the big issues of our time, globalization, migration, climate change, and more recently kind of COVID and other issues, they require cooperation across boundaries.
Yeah.
We can't just go back to being 27 member states. Imagine if we tried to find a COVID vaccine with each of the 27 countries going it alone. I mean, European Union money helped bring about a vaccine and it helped roll out that vaccine across 27 countries. The UK went it alone. Yes, they delivered a vaccine earlier, but if everybody had gone down that road, I think it would have been survival of the fittest.
Definitely.
And that's where I think we should be a little bit proud of Europe. Of course, we want to roll out the vaccine to the developing world, and we are doing that, but we need to do more of that. But I think working together as a union is helping to achieve that.
Yeah. And thanks so much for coming in and talking to me today, Kieran. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.